It is Friday the 29th of May 2015, and this is episode 247 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. Chris in the hosting chair and joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, tired. I just had a quick, I'll just have a quick lie down. And half an hour later, I awoke from a deep snooze. Snoozing's good, but it does declare my age, really, doesn't it?
I don't like snoozing. No. Even if I feel tired, I will deliberately stab myself to, keep awake.
Hopefully I will wake up during the podcast and maybe I'll be animated towards the end of it. Who knows? Let's start off our news with Google I.O., which is the big event this week. And they've been touting their wares. Whether they're wares that are going to appear, who knows? But let's look at what they've touted. So they started with Android M. What's this?
It's Android M for meh. No, that's just
that's terrible.
I know the but it's almost a bit like what Apple are kind of saying this year, that there's not a lot coming out. So it was all about this is it's all polish. They're saying it's not like new features, it's polish. Six core areas of improvements. App permissions. So they've kind of almost went kind of iOS-y. Android was always different. When you installed the app up front, it kind of told you what you were doing rather than when you actually went to use something.
Yep,
and
correct.
Then moving to that model.
So when you're using a feature, that's when it's like, yep. And I think that makes, because people have obviously, there's been lots of scare stories about the number of permissions that some apps use, and I'm guessing this allays that, because it actually shows when an app is actually using a permission, where it's not just feasting on permissions for the sake of it.
Yes.
You will actually see what it's doing.
And I think they've reduced the number. I think they said it was down to 8, I think, from memory. So that looks good. Web experience, so you can almost always have Chrome within an app now without having to go and launch Chrome. And it almost looked like remember we talked last week about Facebook and doing those nice article kind of pages. It was almost like that within an app. So that was quite good for developers. App links. This was to try and make it more obvious to users what's actually happening. And I must admit, I don't use Android enough to know if this is a particularly big issue.
So nowadays, if you click on something, a whole menu will appear and it'll pretty much say, do you want to use Chrome for this? Use, Safari or whatever? Obviously that's not, you get the idea. I'll wake up soon. For phone calls, it would offer you to phone via Skype or via your inbuilt phone, things like that. So I'm guessing they've just linked that down a bit further to actually make it clear that you want to use just the phone app rather than
Skype. And I remember now, because it actually did things like choose this each time, or you can make that the default.
That's it. You can say always make this decision.
One of the biggies was Android Pay. So much like Apple Pay, they've now got Android Pay. And there's also fingerprint support coming. So that will be a big thing. It's no idea about UK launch, a bit like Apple Pay. They said it was kind of this year, but it's obviously never happened yet. The one thing that was,
I thought Android had some sort of payment before. Yeah. Maybe have they just rebranded it?
They had a Google Wallet. There was a whole Google Wallet nonsense.
Yeah, which was all NFC connected and all that kind of stuff.
So this is their kind of, let's rebrand it. It'll support fingerprint. So it's a bit like that whole very quick payment, hold it down. It's authenticating rather than.
And their fingerprint support is obviously, it's going to be supporting different hardware. So it's actually a framework more than an actual specified device, I guess.
Yes. The one thing that they didn't talk about at the show, but they did afterwards, they're beta testing that you don't even have to take your phone out. If you're close by and you say, I would like to pay with Google and walk out, it will actually pay.
I still think that's asking for trouble. I mean, these are all microtransactions, or at least relatively low level transactions. Like the touch pay is all less than £20, I think, isn't it, for your credit cards and things like that.
I would like to pay with Google.
It's a stick up. Can you say this? Read this card out.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Google. That sounds interesting.
Power.
Yeah.
Power was the last one. So there's a kind of new mode called Doze, which is basically, it uses the phone sensors to say, you're not using this. You've left it, you know, sitting at your bedside table, it's sitting at your desk. I can shut a lot of things down because you don't need them right now.
Clever.
So that was quite nice. And they also talked about how they're moving to USB Type-C. So the new phones coming out should all support that, which is that new universal plug it in anyway, but also yes. It supports much faster charging.
Yeah. Okay. And all that sounds, you know, that sounds necessary, doesn't it? So as I'm saying, this is trying to get the end-to-end process and nicer, if you like, and probably it's a bit of a period of consolidation. Everyone knows when they build an app, there's always that time when you want to consolidate. And it sounds a bit like they're trying to consolidate some of the key areas.
Lots of overall polish. You know, Anubia doing cut and paste, it was far friendlier and loads of little touches. And I think iOS is going to be much the same. We'll see that in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
So this is coming out quarter three this year. Reality, that probably means for some phones next year. And maybe not
at least next year, yeah. And so for some fans, that's it will be the end. It just won't continue. But extra, you know, it sounds like because they're not actually doing anything majorly different, it could well, you know, be a, you know, potentially a minor update, effectively. Mm. Something that's not going to be breaking for older phones. Android Wear, obviously, they touting that still, although there's not a lot that they've announced new.
There was nothing. They announced some new stuff when Apple Watch came out. And it was things like, I'm trying to even remember, I think it was you could flip your wrist and it could change pages. And there was remember the whole, because Apple had said about when you're at home, it's on Wi-Fi. And they're saying, well, you can connect to any Wi-Fi and do lots of things. All it really was a real kind of poke at Apple. They talked about how their watches are always on. Rather than Apple's, which you need to flick your wrist or shake it or poke it. We don't do that. And we do custom faces and we do 4,000 apps. It was all...
I mean, it has in many ways, the Android Wear have got the march on Apple iWatch, but it doesn't really make that much difference. They, you know, the Apple will steal it for a bit. Internet of Things, that was quite interesting then. So they've actually come up with the kind of embeddable operating system called Brillo. Really, really lightweight, but has, you know, access to the internet, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, for example. And then Weave on top of that, which is a kind of common language that these Internet of Things can actually communicate via. So this is still very much an emergent thing where there's no one standard that everyone's adhering to. There are sort of mini setups and people have tried already to put in place these kind of frameworks, but maybe Google has the size to be able to do this. But the thing is, Apple won't use it, so.
I know, and that's the thing. I mean, Apple's is HomeKit, and they're still promising that June will see the first HomeKit releases, even though it came out with iOS 9. So it's still a lot for grabs because all the different frameworks are just a bit of a mess.
It's going to depend on the most, I mean, hardware is going to play a part in this, and who can come up with, you know, a sensible batch job of Internet of Things which work with one or the other platform. As soon as they can do that, they probably make people more interested, you know, because it's not until someone buys a thing that talks, you know, talks to the internet and wants to talk to other devices that you realize, well, like, if I buy this, then I have to go and buy that other one, and I have to go and buy this, yeah, because they're exactly the ones that talk together.
The nice thing about something like Brillo is just it on a really, because it's derived from Android, it should be a really cheap platform to get things like Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, you know, that kind of thing. So like Kickstarter projects, I think there's quite a lot of cost just to get off the ground. I think you're going to see lots of, you know, Brillo Kickstarter projects, you know, early next year.
Yeah, like I say, I think this is going to be consumer driven, which whoever can come up with a device that becomes that killer home device that everyone wants, I think we'll start suddenly seeing that take off rather than the other. It doesn't really matter which one's the better technology. Google Now, they've made it more contextual again. So it's not just a sort of separate thing that you go into with Google. It's actually integrating now across apps and in more situations. So it's actually giving you cards and informational slides about what you're doing on your phone at any one time.
Yeah, the new feature Now on Tap actually looked really nice. So you held, and so they showed the demo. It was in Spotify. You're listening to Skrillex. And they just held the home button down. So instead of, you know, just hold it down a little bit longer. And the demo person said, okay, Google, what's his real name? didn't say Skrillex's real name, didn't say the artist's real name, just said, what's his real name? And up popped a little card telling you what Skrillex's real name was. And there was other examples where there was an email about, will we go and see Tomorrowland tomorrow? And just without highlighting it, just by holding down the home button, it said, you probably want to know about this. And it popped up, Tomorrowland trailer, ratings, where it's on. And that kind of thing looked really nice. You could highlight a word in any web page, hold it down, and it just popped up all the information about it. It looked really, a really big step, I think, for Google Now.
And more interestingly as well, I say interestingly, it doesn't need any app updates to do this. It's actually reading what's going on your screen. So it doesn't, to be able to integrate into all your existing apps, it doesn't need that app to update itself. It will, can just work off the bat. I don't know how that works. It'll be interesting to hear the stories behind how that works.
Because
someone's not going to be happy about that.
No, and they talked about a whole lot of how you do a whole lot of machine learning, and it's all about context and where you are. And that was a bit of the theme of the show, because they talked about it with Android, where it was all about context. They talked about it with a few of the other apps, it's all about context. And then you saw Now on Tap, and it was like, well, that's impressive.
Google Photos, it's a new service apparently. but it kind of looks very much like the old Google Plus offering, just without the Google Plus wrapper. So effectively, it's a new offering where they're just saying, put all your photos here. You can store everything you like at really high resolution, and it'll be available wherever you want. This is separate from Picasa, separate from Google Plus, but effectively it's the same idea, but just wrapped in a different way.
Yeah, they've moved. Before the website launch, which is photos.google.com, it was basically saying, hold on, we're coming from Google Plus, and it kind of migrated to Google Plus stuff over. But the nice thing is, it's on iOS as well, so the app's out already. And you can sign up and it'll upload all your photos. If you're not fussed about, and I'm saying not fussed about resolution, what they're basically saying is it's unlimited storage. If you've got photos and videos, you can stick them up, but it's up to 16 megapixels and up to 1080p videos. But there is some compression, and they do some things. But it doesn't, to the eye, it doesn't look any different. I think if you were printing...
I think Google, they're pretty good on the compression side of things. From YouTube's side, they've got all that experience. They've got all the algorithms already there. So, YouTube videos, high res, do look good.
And it was like the home bit, where you could go between, months and years and stuff, very similar to what Apple had done as well. They actually looked the same product. The only difference I could see straight off the bat was the... Apple tend to put you at the bottom where your new stuff is, and Google's at the top with your new stuff, and neither give you a sort order, so you can't change it. So it's like, okay.
It looked very, very quick to scroll to the top.
Oh, no, it was. It was.
That sort of speed scroll at the side.
And organize, they're going to use, we talked about with Flickr, you love it. I was a bit more slightly shady about it, but they're using machine learning as well, so that you don't need to tag anything. They're going to try and categorize it all, so search for trees and your photos, and it'll pull out all the photos with trees on it. And it seems to work quite well.
Let's look forward to the stories of the goofs that makes over the coming weeks. I think, if you're an Android, that it's a no-brainer. So I've already got the auto backup on Google Plus. I've already got the backup on Google Plus. So this will just take over from that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And as you say, I think you can migrate over. It's not ready for me yet. It's not there. It said, I've got my placeholder, if you like. It says it's coming soon. So we will see. Right, what else? Outside of, in fact, where am I? I'm completely lost now. Here we go.
So the next bit in the show, and I guess was something that should be commended on, they almost kind of alternated between men and women doing the briefings. And if you look at a lot of the Apple, Apple's always been knocked for it. There's never a woman on stage. It's always men.
Yeah.
And these were women in multi-race. There was no all, white, typical, male Californian guy up there doing his demo. This was all about Next Billion. So this was them trying to emphasize what they're doing to get, and they never talked about stats. Usually talk about stats for how many Android users there were. There was nothing. But this was them saying, we've got 1 billion. How do we get the next? And it was all about the developing countries, less money, poorer wages, slower infrastructure. So they talked about how they've got Android One in India, Chromebooks, they're trying to go big on optimizing pages to make them work slower. So rather than, you as a developer having to do it, they are trimming down images, trimming down pages, making it really lightweight. YouTube offline, so they know that out in a lot of countries there's just no infrastructure to you know watch a video. So they've got this, they're trialing a few countries that you can actually download a video for up to 2 days on your phone. So if you want to go and watch something, you can do it. And I'm sitting there thinking, actually, I'd like that now.
Absolutely. All these things, it's not just for, you know, developing countries. Absolutely. All these things make the internet better.
Maps offline, so you had full turn by turn. You could search for places. So again, really impressive stuff. And it was nice to see, and obviously they're looking at it that we get a whole load of people's data. We get
This is the search for the next load of people. Yeah.
But I don't know. It was an impressive.
It benefits everyone.
Impressive 10, 15 minutes. It was like, that's nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everyone benefits from that, and it's all technology that we will see again as more and more people use the internet. They'll have to find these.
Now, the next bit was all about developers, and it was like, it was just like, oh, the developer things. There's a new Android studio.
God, those bloody developers.
Exactly. There was some new things around cloud test labs and
all these things are interesting. Like, so they are. If you are in the development sphere, the Android Studio is interesting. Polymer is, they've had that out for a while, but they've released version one. So Polymer is their kind of framework which you can build web apps that feel web apps that feel kind of like native apps. And they've a few other bits and bobs, but I guess we don't really concentrate on that development.
No, I mean cloud messaging. They send 70 billion messages every day. I mean, 70 billion.
Mental.
And that's just on like Android and Chrome. They now support iOS. So I can only imagine the kind of uptick that's going to be. Because as a developer, you can then say, well, if I've got an app on both platforms, that's the route I'll probably go down.
Yeah. I don't know if that will get blocked at some point. I've just had a message from Google saying that the SMS messaging service that they're using on their calendars, they're stopping that now. And you can kind of see when you suddenly get those kind of figures where you've got 70 billion, you imagine the cost of 70 billion
it must be massive.
Messages. I guess there's a subset of those which are SMS, and the carrier costs must be immense for a free service.
Yeah.
Okay, VR was another thing that they touched on. We saw Google Cardboard, was it 2 years ago?
No, it was last year.
Was it last year already? Okay.
Because everybody was talking about Oculus at the time, yeah. And then they did this cardboard thing, and you were like, that's...
And everyone went out, so that's quite good.
Yeah.
and it's expanding, so they're going to actually release the design for Google Cardboard, is that right?
They are. So basically, last year's was it was a 20% project, but it's now had 1 million... So they call that cardboard, they call it a viewer. 1 million people have shipped 1 million of them. There's a new design because phones got bigger and it only worked to a certain size, and it now supports iOS. So the SDK is now available for iOS as well. And there was a couple of tweets last night. It was like, yep, Apple users can now see how laggy the experience is in Google Cardboard. But they also talked about this thing called Expeditions, where there's basically the teacher has a tablet and there's a classroom of these viewers. And she gets the kids to put on the viewers, and then she controls the kind of VR experience they go to, so they can do VR field trips. And it was kids. The video, when you watched it, they were all like, wow, we're in, you know, Madrid, or we're in whatever. And again, you know, quite nice.
And quite considerably cheaper than having everyone having an Oculus headset.
Yes.
Was that the end? Have I missed something?
No, there was also Jump. So Jump is basically, this is like their big push into VR video. So this was basically three things. It was the camera, the rig, and the actual player. So later this year, they're going to put out the plans for how to build a rig. The rig is basically, I think it's 16 cameras that you need.
Yeah, you'll have seen these probably on Gadget and Geek shows where they show how they make those kind of 3D views of places.
Yes, and I know.
In fact, it's probably like the thing they have on the top of the Google Map cars. Yeah, kind of effect.
It's like a ring, and the 16 cameras are all placed around it. And we did something at work years ago where it was like you had a thing called Nodo Ninja, and you could just put in your DSLR, and you took your four photos and you stitched them together, and you could just pan around a photo. But this is now video.
And then the technicalities of interlacing those two together and stretching, you know, and interpolating between the gaps.
And this is some of the challenge they've got. So they also said that GoPro is going to build and release a Jump Ready 360 camera kit later this year. But the assembly bit was interesting. But they do basically, there's thousands of these viewpoints. It's all video. and they kind of put it together to give you good stereoscopic video. And they can figure out depth data from the images. So there's a whole lot of things. You're like, wow, that's quite
impressive. So it works out a 3D video based on those still camera pictures, or does it work? Are they actually videos that it's taking?
Videos. So it's all videos it's taking.
It's mind-boggling, the processing power that takes.
So it takes thousands of computers, and that's what they admitted. Mm. This isn't a load it up in your iMac or your Mac Pro. This is thousands of computers. So this year, if you do go and build something, they're only going to initially let a select few people use it this summer, because I'm guessing they're looking at probably, I don't know, some of the big museums using it, or you know, some of the big sport events maybe trying to use it and taking a VR experience.
But in effect, you can be, with a headset on, you can be in not just a still 3D environment or a computer-generated environment. This is actually video footage of a real place, a real location at real time.
Yep.
Pretty mind-boggling.
And you can fire it up on YouTube right now. So YouTube will support full VR soon, and I should put the link in the show notes, but there is a demo video they put out last night, and it's of two cars kind of racing around, you know, and burning rubber, etc., and doing donuts. And you can use your mouse, or you can use the keys to move around the video as it's moving. But it does like chug. It's like, wow. This is going to hurt computers. It's going to force everybody to upgrade, probably.
Okay, so that was I/O. We normally jest about whether we'll see any of these outcomes from I/O, because they do talk a lot. But it actually sounds this sounds more realistic.
Yeah, that was my exact reference. I was going to say, yeah, this felt realistic. I actually thought it was a good. I mean, I think it was about 2.25 hours, so still quite long, but it was more. I don't know, everything felt more tangible. It felt like that is...
Because they're from a starting point. Did we mention the bit about... We haven't mentioned the bit. They're doing cloud testing for all the multiple devices. And that's something that's a killer app for them now.
Yep.
Because they have to support so many. And people, you know, I think we saw the pictures not too long ago of how many devices people had to have in these proper app development houses to just cater for all these things. But they've now making a cloud version of that, so you can go and test across thousands of devices without needing to own all of those devices. So that's great. So it's all handy, useful stuff. And as they say, it's more about solidifying what they've got now rather than pushing forward. Sort of ahead of the curve, if you like.
And,
so that's good.
And Google Inbox, which was that kind of alternative email client, is now out for everybody. So previously you had to kind of register and wait and get an invite.
You can now download
Just
that.
Just download it and enjoy it.
And that's kind of Inbox plus task list plus ability to sort of snooze mails and things like that. So all those kind of nice things I can't remember the product name.
The one that Dropbox bought, Mailbox.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
So there was Mailbox, but there's another one came out for iOS today called Spark, I think, which has gotten everybody talking. So I think there's lots of these alternative mail clients, which is all about using your mail. Because a lot of the time...
Inbox zero, yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of the time it's all action items. It's all getting things done nonsense.
Okay, so outside of I/O, Amazon have decided, or they've made the decision to actually start paying tax. Whether it's in reaction to the new sort of rules that are going to come in to stop making companies avoid paying tax, but basically it means if you're earning profit from the UK, then you should be paying tax in the UK. Companies have got around this previously by having companies in less taxable areas of Europe and funneling all the funds into there. Luxembourg was Amazon's location of choice. Other companies have different places, but it looks like other companies probably gonna have to start doing the same thing.
Yeah,
there is there's a punitive tax coming if they don't.
And I think it's Google and Apple who I think use Ireland, so it'll be interesting to see if they make the shift.
It's such a hard thing across borders. How do you enforce this? Certainly, we don't want to disincentivize companies from coming to the UK.
No,
and that's always the risk, isn't it?
But I know something that got lost when Apple did their updates a couple of weeks ago was there was quite a few UK prices went up.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what it'll end up being. Prices for consumers will go up.
Yeah, and Apple make it really clear now when you're buying, there's the price you're paying, here's what's tax. You know, it's not us, and they're making it like crystal clear. It's almost bigger and bolder than the actual price you pay. It's like, look, tax! Yeah.
Look how cheap it would be if your government let us funnel out profits.
I'm waiting to see all the fuel stations or the petrol stations start to do it as well. It's like your petrol only costs this. This is what the government gets.
Yeah.
Really bold.
Microsoft Cortana is coming to other platforms. So whereas, you know, Siri is obviously locked to iOS, Google is locked to all your Android devices, Cortana is going to spread across different devices. So you will get an Android helper app and an iOS helper app. Will they get traction from it?
Potentially, because what they're talking about as well is that, and you can download it if you update your Windows, I've not done it yet, you can update your Windows 10 VM, and you can see that seemingly this software is now available. So I think when you start it up, it now says, what do you want to sync with? And then it recommends you download like the iOS app or whatever. And I think that bit's not out yet, but it's all about then making it easy to get all your contacts and data, you know, onto whatever platform you use, and making sure that you're still using a Windows PC no matter. And to me, it's like they know mobile's not working for them. You know, they're doing all these what they consider great things, they're not getting any sales. So if they want to keep Windows going, they know they have to need to do something like this.
And will it pair with your Windows machine? Is that the idea? So when it's on your phone, it will still be able to talk to your Windows PC.
And it's to make it easy to access like OneDrive. You know, so they've got OneDrive everywhere, and they've got OneNote everywhere. You know, so they really have gone quite big on making sure all these things are available everywhere. So it kind of makes sense.
Johnny, I've been promoted to a new role, company chief design officer. This was a role that didn't exist before. So it sounds like they've just, you know, he's still doing the same thing, but now he's got two underlings doing two branches of what he was previously in charge of, which was, I guess, the product design plus the interface design, right?
Yeah. And there's been so many Apple blogs just talking about this, and, oh, this is him leaving, this is him moving, and this is him... And I don't know if you saw it, because what's his face? Stephen Fry interviewed him. And Stephen Fry's, yes, he's a big, massive geek and he loves Apple. I think he was the second person in the UK to buy a Mac, or the original Mac, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it's such a fawning interview. I mean, it is like, you know, somebody interviewing a hero. You know, it would be like you in the interview, and I don't know.
You don't end up getting anything out of it.
Yeah, you know, you're like, if you're interviewing Lewis Hamilton or something, if that was a hero, and you'd just be like totally fawning over him, and like, you're literally the best. Yeah. But there was one little bit of it where it's because everybody's getting excited about it. But if you read this little interview, they're asking about, you know, why this is a good move, and he basically comes out and says, it gives me time to think. I don't need to be a manager. I can actually design. That's what he wants to do. He doesn't want to manage. He wants to, you know, the mind's free. And they can avoid using the blue sky thinking. It was just, you know, it gives me time to. You know, it gives me freedom.
Which is fine. I mean, since he took over product design, I think there's been some slightly unusual design decisions going on there.
But it's bizarre. So, he's in charge of the new massive UFO office that they're building. He's designing desks for the office. He's designing chairs for the office. He's seemingly behind his new store redesign. All sorts of things that you're like,
But maybe he's good at product design, but say interface design, I think there were some strange decisions going on there.
Some of the button choices I still think are a bit, you know, the fact that you can go into accessibility and turn off, make this a button, and it all looks a little bit easier to use, I think.
But it still looks ugly though.
But
I think it'd be better if it was actually button.
I know, but to me, the chase, the look, and they lost some of the actual.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was some strange. Who knows the ultimate reasons that will play out in real time. But yeah, like you say, it's how can one man do all of that? That seems unreasonable as well, I guess.
And
maybe he's split across too many things.
They've got a big team, you know, so it isn't just, you know, I think he's obviously signing off on a lot of it, and he obviously he wants to be hands on because that's probably what he loves. You know,
but from an Apple point of view, if you're managing, you know, if you're trying to look after the whole thing, where is his time better spent? Is it making this space, you know, this pod with amazing desks that brings no benefit to a consumer? Would his time not be better spent producing a new product?
Well, you can look at it the other way, that if he is responsible for giving all the employees of Apple an environment where they can, you know, work better, think better.
Not going to earn them as much money as it would if he put all that time into making a next great product.
Well, that's assuming that he is just the one person behind all the next great product. I think it is definitely a team effort. He's obviously leading that team, but he's obviously given free rein. And I think a lot of it is, I mean, I admit, again, you don't know, is it ego? You know, is it like, if he doesn't, if I don't design this, I'm off. You know, and they're saying, Johnny, you do what you like. You are Sir Johnny.
see what happens. But like I say, there's, you know, the law of diminishing returns, right?
And it does, you do wonder. There is only so much. And also that I've always had this thing about, you know, some of these designers, have they only got so much they can give, and then you get burnt out. You know, and you need to go and recharge, you need to go and refresh, so you need to go and...
Doesn't seem to happen like that, does it? So,
well, I don't know. As you say, some of the UI choices are...
Sure, but the products have never, you know,
products,
never been
stronger.
Products, there.
I think.
They've got one particular distinct design look, and you can see where they're going with it, and all their product range looks the same. It's, you know, it's that, it's very, you know, it's clever. It's clever. Mm. Jeff Williams.
Who?
From Apple.
Who?
Yeah. don't ask me. He's from Apple, apparently.
He's a new Tim Cook. He took over Tim Cook's job. He's the operations guy now.
Okay. Right. And he's saying a native SDK will be out for the watch soon. So currently it's running off of kind of it's almost like it funnels all its power from your phone it's connected to or synced to, but they will actually have native apps coming, and SDK will be released. So all the things that the actual Apple Watch, the Apple devices, you know, the Apple apps that are already on the watch, they're already using that kind of native area, and now they'll be opening that up to developers. So watch this space, in effect. So things should be a bit slicker and a bit more responsive.
I did send a tweet to Tim Cook thanking him for letting me be a beta tester for the last few months and for the coming few months, and I look forward to the actual 1.0 release of applications.
But they did the same with the phone, didn't they? So, you know, the phone was very much a lockdown thing, and then they opened it up bit by bit.
It was. It's interesting that they did this in one of the, it was the Code Conference interview, and it was a bit more open than normal. You know, this is coming next week, you'll find out more. You know, this is coming next week, you'll find out more. And you'll be able to all access all the sensors, all access the digital crown. Yeah. And it will be nice to see there is a difference. There still is a difference when you open up even the apps that have now been redone. And like my to-do app, Todoist, came out with their app this week. And it is nice, but it's still sluggish. It still takes a while to launch. And you know once that's... Because it's actually, and I know it sounds cheesy as hell, but see dictating a to-do, and it's got all the intelligent things. So if I say, you know, podcast with Chris tomorrow at 6:30, and it does it all and puts all the time in the right place, and it uses Siri for all that. It's like, that's nice.
Okay, I'm saying it's typical
that guy.
Apple.
I am that guy now. It's dictating.
Yeah, you are now. You are. You're a risk talker. Yeah, it's typical Apple, isn't it? You know, have a product and then open up gradually as, you know, as they want to release new versions and stuff like that. So yeah, okay. Oculus Rift, we talked about that earlier. They reckon a kind of complete package cost with the Rift plus the machine capable of running it, it's going to be about $1,500.
Which sounds scary, scary biscuits, but then what they're saying is that's if you have to go and buy a PC. You know, so if you're like me right now and a Mac user, if I have to go and buy from scratch, that's what I'm paying.
It's an interesting line to take for them. I don't know why they've gone down that kind of route of, maybe they realize that there's so many Macs out there, they're just having to put that out. But
I don't know. I don't know because
a lot of people will have I mean, I know they're talking about super super souped up machine you're going to need to run this. It's almost like they're going to sell this as packages.
I don't know because was it last week, the week before, they came out with, you know, if you're looking at a laptop, there's basically none out right now that will run the Oculus, and it's almost hitting. I think this is hitting that. Yeah, that's the price. So that when they bring the headset out, so they're doing something in a couple of weeks' time, and whether we get a price for the actual headset itself, it's almost like they're setting the scene. And even if you've got a super duper PC right now, you're going to have to buy some graphics cards. You're going to have to probably update your.
Like I say, it sounds like they're almost going to release a packaged, you know,
I don't know,
headset and computer all in one. It just sounds a bit like that,
which is weird.
It would be weird. It'd be annoying for a lot of people who've got a souped up enough. You know, a top of the range gaming machine, for example.
It's back to that setting it. You know, like Apple with the watch and the battery, and they said it's 18 hours and it's actually fine. You know, it lasts well through the day. I just wonder if they're setting that expectation. You know, it's around that 1,500. It's not going to be. You know, if somebody's sitting here thinking I'm going to get an Oculus for 300, you know, quid, you're not. You know, you're going to have to invest a bit.
Yeah, I wonder. Okay, and they are saying over time they believe that overall package cost will have to come down. Well, they would like it down to about $1,000. So, which again is not for depending on how good this machine ends up being, because we're still not sure of the final specs of this and whether it really be up to snuff. But yeah, about $1,000, a lot of money.
It is, but still excited.
yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely the next thing. So yeah, I'm still buzzing from my small experience with a headset. I just say it was unbelievable.
I had one last week. I had Oculus Rift on, and the company we were demoing with had put a Leap Motion in the front, so you could see your hands and you could move around the ship we were in, and you pointed and you actually moved. And it was a bit flaky with the old Leap, but it was actually I found it intuitive because I was like, how'd you move? And I pointed and I was like, oh, you point. I was like, this is great. And I just find it so more immersive than 3D and other things. I just find like I'm in and I know where I am.
Yeah, yeah. No, like I say, it was a total eye opener for me.
But it was interesting. A couple of the people that I work with, it was totally opposite. It was very alien. It was like, whoa, don't like this. This is, sick.
So I think that a lot of people are going to suffer from that. Luckily, I didn't. So.
Yeah, but I think it's just what you're used to. And I think we're used to that.
Maybe, yeah, you're maybe just a bit more switched on to it. Your brain just accepts it more, maybe, or something like that.
Might explain the migraines.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, that's the end of our podcast. Unless you got a pick. Have you got a pick?
No,
okay. I'm about 8 hours into Witcher now, so I'm still only tickling around the edges, but I'm still enjoying it.
That sounds like the intro level you've went through.
Well, yeah, I mean, or a tenth of the way through, I guess, something like that.
Wow.
Anyway, that's the end of the podcast, but if you want to find out more about what we do, who we are, and etc., digitaloutbox.com is the website. info@digitaloutbox.com. You can talk to us, and you can also talk to us over Twitter. Digitaloutbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK. It's the most active stream you'll ever find on Twitter. And my blog, if you want to watch and find out all about my racing antics, is academyracer.co.uk. Where are you, Ian?
I am on blogging at iand.net, Twittering at Sweeper, and your photos this week were a fine example of what you get up to in a race weekend.
There you go. Snoozing, worrying,
winning,
and then almost celebrating. Yeah. don't over egg it. Nearly winning is my racing spot.
But you could have put winner at the bottom of one of those photos and nobody would have known.
There wouldn't have been a difference, though. All right, so thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week. So goodbye.
Goodbye. Chris, I salute you for staying awake.
I did. I'm feeling quite awake now. It's time to go to the gym and knock myself out again, I guess.
Boom.
There we go. How exciting.
Boom.
Welcome to my life.
So it's basically eat, sleep, code, gym, repeat.
You've missed out a lot of eating.
Oh, okay. And TV and Big Brother and
and you missed out Big Brother, and it's hard work at the moment. Big Brother and what you call it, Britain's Got Talent as well.
Oh, you don't.
These are important things to watch, and it takes up a lot of time. That's like 2 hours every day.
Do you know, I've never watched a full episode of Britain's Got Talent.
More fool you.